to glow in the dark.
Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark.
This is the Science Fiction Podcast, Glow in the Dark Radio. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. I read you my science fiction on this podcast, and I've got a short story featuring my character Alibi Jones coming up on this podcast episode. Alibi Jones is currently going up against a time-traveling race known as the Devrisium. Let me set up the story for you so you can enjoy it, even if this is your first time listening. Our story's called Memory Yet Green. Now, Alibi Jones is a mediator for the Solar Alliance in the 2130s as humankind expands out into the already crowded galactic neighborhood. He's run afoul of the mysterious xenophobic time-traveling race known as the Devrisium. They have declared war. But what does a time war look like? It's not usually a confrontation between forces, though that can happen. It's usually a subtler thing, not always evident. Changes in the timeline, alterations to outcomes. The Devrisium say time is fluid, that it bends and flows and changes before it breaks. But the Devrisium have broken the time stream. They keep track. One of them told Alibi, "We're in the 9th or 10th timeline to exist since they've been altering them." The Devrisium will mess with time. Alibi Jones was in his late 20s when he went to sleep last night. At least he thought so. But the Alibi Jones who wakes up in our story, Memory Yet Green, is an old man. Alibi Jones has grown old. The only problem is he doesn't really remember growing old. Oh, he has the memories. But something isn't right. Find out what's going on in Memory Yet Green, coming up on Glow in the Dark Radio. Remember, you can find all my stuff online at glowinthedarkradio.com and at mikeluoma.com, M-I-K-E-L-U-O-M-A. That's how you find me on Facebook and Twitter, too. I'm just there under my own name, /Mike Luoma. There is a Glow in the Dark Radio Facebook page. There's a group. We have a group, the Radio Activists. You can join up. I'm on Instagram as Glow in the Dark Radio. And speaking of radio activists, that's what I call my mailing list. You can join that as well. If you haven't been receiving any newsletters from me and you had signed up in the past, please sign up again. Having to get everyone to opt back in has proven to be a little bit challenging. So you may not still be on the mailing list, even if you've signed up in the past. So please, if you do want to hear what's going on, stop by any of my pages. The Facebook page, Glow in the Dark Radio, or glowinthedarkradio.com or mikeluoma.com, and sign up for the mailing list. Before we get into the short story, I do have a little bit of news. I hope you get the chance to check out my music extra. I did put up a special extra episode of Glow in the Dark Radio on Friday. I had the chance to interview a couple of great Burlington musicians, Matt Hutton and Sean Tuohy. These days, Matt actually lives down in the Nashville area. But he came up, and they did a special reunion gig this past Saturday night, last night as I record this. And on Thursday afternoon, we had the chance to sit down and talk about their 25-year career in music. That was on WBKM.org on Friday, and then I put it on the podcast. So that is out there as an extra episode, a music extra. Sean and Matt were originally in a band called Spray 9 back in the very early 90s in Burlington. Then they were in a band called Envy. And back when I was on WIZN in Burlington, we played their song Bomb quite heavily. It was in rotation. Then Matt and Sean left Burlington, headed down to Boston, and formed a new band called The Red Telephone, which pretty quickly got signed to Warner Brothers Records, and they had a major label debut out. Things didn't go the way you hope. They became an indie band again, put out a couple more albums. And we talk about all of that on the Music Extra. And it was awesome to see them last night, man. Some of those songs I haven't heard live in years, decades. So it was great. This is also what I do. I do music interviews. You didn't used to hear them on the podcast because I used to be on commercial radio. And when I was on commercial radio, they didn't want me playing them on my podcast. But now that I'm on WBKM.org, I not only can do these kind of like cool in-depth things, but I can also share them with you on the podcast, which is very cool. So that's where that music extra came from, in case you were curious. Now, if you listen to the music extra and all of a sudden you're listening now and you're going, well, what's this, Mike? This is what I do. I read my science fiction on this podcast. I'm a science fiction writer and an author besides being a radio guy. Speaking of which, I've got a new audiobook out. The Sunrise of Her audiobook is now available. That was the one we just finished podcasting a couple weeks ago. That's Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her. It's the second book in The Adventures of Alibi Jones, but I do believe you can read it on its own. And now you can get it and listen to it on Audible, on Amazon, on iTunes. Brand new audiobook release of The Sunrise of Her. And this book that we're listening to right now, Alibi Jones and the Time War of the Devrisium, there are only 4 short stories. So we've got one more to go next week. And this book should be up on Amazon as an audiobook on Audible. By that time, I'll let you know. That is it for news. We're about to get into Alibi Jones and the Time War of the Devrisium and the short story, Memory Yet Green. But first, a quick promo for my friend Nutty and her show Nutty Bites. They had a really good episode, the new one, probably still new as you listen to this, inspired by the recent MTV Decoded video that was out there talking about Axe and Ask. Most recent episode of Nutty Bites talks about that and code switching, where you switch between languages and dialects. So here's a word about Nutty Bites, and then we'll get into Memory Yet Green as the adventures of Alibi Jones continue on Glow in the Dark Radio.
Hi, I'm Nuke Choss, the host of Nutty Bites.
And hi, I'm Tech, Nutty's regular guest.
Or antagonist. Our podcast is like a call-in show where geeks get to debate topics about speculative fiction.
We don't really debate.
Sure we do. We debate topics such as lame superpowers, the best villains, and our favorite apocalypses.
We're more like rant, rave, and then have massive nerd rages.
People call in from all over the world, sometimes minor celebrities, and we've even had some supervillains show up.
Do you ever notice that you never have any superheroes or good guys?
I'm a good guy.
Compared to what?
Antagonist. Not really a guest. Nutty Bites. Nimlast.org.
Now, here's Alibi Jones, Memory Yet Green, on Glow in the Dark Radio. Alibi Jones wakes up before the big blue sun once again. Another early morning on Rigel 4. He sits up in bed, slowly. Swings his legs out over the side, his feet feeling for his slippers on the floor. Emily lets out one of her little sighs as she shifts slightly behind him on the bed, still sleeping. Alibi tries not to disturb her. He no longer sleeps through the night. Not that he doesn't need the sleep. He inevitably ends up snoozing through part of the afternoon. He just doesn't seem to need it all at once anymore. Another day alive. Every day breathing is a good day. Aunt Anita used to say that. There was something he wanted to tell his aunt. He couldn't remember what it was, but that didn't make sense. She had been gone for a long time now. She'd lived to a ripe old age, but passed peacefully in her sleep over 30 years ago. How could he tell her anything? Something is wrong. But what? Alibi can't remember. He looks back over his shoulder at Em, as she breathes and dreams. Still lovely. Always so strong. So beautiful. After a few false starts, he'd finally found the one. And lucky for him,
she actually thought he was interesting and funny. The way she'd sometimes look at him, the shine in her hazel eyes, made him feel like a better man. So many years now. So many good times together. Only, just now? He can't quite think of a specific instance. Separate out one of those good times. He swallows hard, his mouth gone dry. An anxious tightness begins to grip his chest. Alibi can't remember. How did we meet? When was it? How long ago? He knows he should know. He should remember marrying his wife. Is this it? Is this how it happens? How it all slips away? Am I losing my mind? He looks away from M and straightens out in place, slumping over a little. Alibi rubs his face with his right hand while his left steadies him on the bed. He sighs and thinks about lying back down to try to go back to sleep. Who am I kidding? He pushes himself up and stands next to the bed. Alibi looks down at Emily. Again, he looks away, ashamed of all he knows he now can't recall. Why can't I remember? He makes his way into the refresher room and closes the door behind him before he turns on the light. Alibi looks at his tired, lined, and wrinkled 91-year-old face in the mirror. Something is wrong. Why can't I remember anything? Alibi? Emily is sitting up in bed with the night table light on when Alibi leaves the refresher. You're up early, she says. Excited about today, huh? Excited? Why? What is today? Couldn't sleep, Alibi says, trying to cover. Sorry I woke you. Was trying not to. Can't panic. Won't. Don't feel confused. Just feels like there are no memories there. You didn't, she says. I just woke up. She looks at him intently, studying him, with a strange, inquisitive expression on her face. She heard something odd in Alibi's voice, knows something is wrong already. She has grown too familiar with the patterns and rhythms of his speech not to notice when the pattern slips and the rhythm skips its beat. Alibi, she probes gently. What's wrong? Can I trust her? Tell her I don't remember what today is? Of course I can. We've had each other's backs for years. Haven't we? Oh my God, I don't remember. Wait, her name. What is her name? Emily, Alibi says as he remembers. What is it, Alibi? She asks after he pauses. You don't sound like yourself. Alibi recalls her well enough to know there's fear in her voice as she asks. I think, he tries, and stops, and tries again. I might be losing it, Emily. I feel like I've forgotten everything. Nonsense, Emily replies. She shakes her head. You were fine just last night. But Emily, Alibi tells her. Fear makes his eyes go wide. I don't remember growing old. Alibi and Emily walk through the eerily empty labs of the project facility on Rigel 4, with the chief administrator and head scientist Dr. Alexandra Shinose. Shinose is an ancient, prim, thin Asian woman in an oversized lab coat and blue latex gloves. She seems loath to touch anything and wouldn't shake their hands when they arrived, though she seemed honestly overjoyed to see them. "We get almost no visitors here anymore," Shinose says, as she leads them through empty rooms to her office in the back of the facility. "As you can see, most of the labs have already been mothballed." She laughs a small, nervous laugh, and then continues. "I have been wondering about that term, mothballed. Did you know there once were actual such things? Mothballs." Alibi and Emily exchange looks as they follow the woman. No, Alibi answers. Shinose looks back. "Some were made of naphthalene. Others a kind of dichlorobenzene, some camphor," she says. The old professor in her comes out. "You would seal the mothballs up with clothes that these small flying insects, moths, like to eat. The mothballs would sublimate, turn to gas, and kill any moths trapped inside, so they wouldn't eat the clothes while they were in storage."
"So, wait," Alibi says. "What does that have to do with shutting down a lab? Or closing down any facility?"
"Something is wrong here, too."
"It's actually sort of an optimistic term when you think about it," Shinose says. "You would put mothballs in with winter clothing when it was sealed up and put away for the summer season. So, in a way, to mothball a place means you are sealing it up and shutting it down with the intent of future use, for when it is needed again."
"So, they're shutting the labs down, but holding on to the facility in case they need it?" Alibi asks. He can't put his finger on what's bothering him about the labs. Everything just seems smaller.
"Why, Dr. Shinose, I didn't know you were an optimist," Emily says. "I am retiring," Shinose says. She sighs. "It is bittersweet, but I do not mind entirely that the lab is retiring along with me. We have not been able to do the work for which this facility was designed for a long time. Not since the Supreme Leaders declared time travel research off limits."
Both Shinose and Emily look at Alibi, expecting some reaction.
What? Alibi says.
Emily and Shinose then exchange glances.
"You are right," Shinose says to Emily. "He is not himself."
"Why, wait." Alibi tries to figure out what the women are talking about.
"Despite your implants and their negative biofeedback, you always have something to say about the Supreme Leaders,"
Emily says.
"You always say the shocks remind you of the past."
"Tell me what to say," Alibi says. "I'd love to remember something."
Emily and Shinose exchange fearful looks.
"We do not dare, Alibi," Emily says in a whisper. "What the hell?"
The three reach the door to Shinose's office.
"You two stay here," the doctor says. "I'll get the pass key."
She ducks into the office for a brief moment, reappearing with an old-fashioned pass key in her hand.
"Time to get some old equipment out of mothballs."
Alibi recognizes the old machine the moment he sees it. Dr. Krishnavurti's reconstruction of Azamet's time machine. When he was a much younger man, Alibi and his cat-like alien Dakor friend Kit had fought against Azamet, one of the almost human race known as the Ancient Enemy. Azamet had traveled forward in time, escaping as the rest of his race was destroyed 1,000,000 years ago. His time machine propelled his bioelectrical matrix ahead, into the far future. Arriving in our time, his disembodied energy required a host. Azamet's first had been a felon named Mazakov,
After Azamet constructed and used a new time machine and his energy left Mazikov, Alibi and Kit had helped Dr. Krish recover Mazikov's dead body and the remains of the machine, helping Krish bring them back to Rigel IV for study. This facility was then newly built for time travel technology research. Krish led a team of scientists reverse engineering Azamet's machine and building new ones. Alibi remembered meeting Shinasei here when she was a young woman, working with Krish. They had tried to show him how they could send an apple a few seconds ahead in time, but when the apple reappeared, it exploded into applesauce. Structural difficulties, Krish had called it. That was early, before they had run into the time-traveling Devrisium. The Devrisium had much more highly developed time-travel technology. Alibi Jones had been one of the first targets of the Devrisium when they began their time war against humankind. The Devrisium claimed Alibi had somehow altered the timeline and stolen their destiny. Alibi had no idea what he had done, except continued to live. This seemed to be a problem for the Devrisium, although they'd never been able to kill him, no matter how many times they tried to mess with the time stream.
What a relief to remember something.
Alibi tries to recall the end of the war. Some memories come back.
We stopped the Devrisium in the end. Got our hands on their technology. It was right here we figured their tech out, found ways to protect ourselves, and discovered how to use their superior time travel tech for ourselves. Figured out how to build our own machines, and then...
The memories refuse to return. But Alibi does remember a time when this lab was a very different place, a much busier and somehow bigger facility.
They must have moved all that other stuff out of here already. At least this old thing is still here.
Shinosei straps Alibi into the capsule of the time machine, fastening restraints around his head, chest, arms, and legs. She closes the capsule and powers up the old machine. It begins to hum, a low bass tone. The air around the machine begins to glow with blue, crackling static energy. Alibi looks out from the capsule, past the weird electricity. He can see the field outside, through the windows in the opposite wall.
Wait a second. Wasn't there another wing over there? Where the first travel booth was?
Shinosei powers up the reconstructed time machine. I am running the machine at very low power. The machine's field will activate any tachyons still around you, Shinosei says. I'll be able to measure them. See if there's been any temporal tampering with your mind.
Do you think that's why I don't remember?
I have no idea, Shinosei says, but it's a place to start. Azamet could only move energy forward through time. The Devrisium had found a way to move physically both forward and backward through time. This made the Devrisium very dangerous when they decided they should be the...
Supreme leaders of the known universe. That means...
The Devrisium won? As Alibi speaks, twin pain centers erupt on either side of his skull, over his ears, behind his eyes. All he can see is white. His brain burns. Alibi comes to, still strapped in the capsule. The energy is gone. The capsule door is open. The two old women stand outside. Emily is holding an energy gun. It's pointed at Alibi. He blinks. His head hurts. He still feels a little foggy.
Maybe I didn't see that right.
But when he opens his eyes again, his wife is still holding the gun on him.
Don't, Emily says. Don't say their name.
She squints as she looks at him.
You really don't remember, do you?
I'm so sorry, Emily, Shinosei says.
All those tachyons. You were right to call me.
Emily looks at the doctor, but keeps the gun trained on Alibi.
I didn't want to be right, Emily says. I want my alibi. I'm Alibi,
Alibi insists, drawing the women's attention back to him.
You shut up, Emily says, brandishing the energy gun. I don't know who you are, you ancient enemy.
What? Alibi can't believe what he's hearing.
My alibi warned me, Emily says. He told me about Azamet and these machines, and how the ancient enemy could move through time as energy and take over people.
She shakes as she holds the gun out in front of her. If she were to fire it, there's no telling where the energy bolt would fly.
He told me if he ever acted strange and wasn't himself, I should go to the project and get help.
I am sorry that all that is left of the project here is me, Shinose apologizes.
Don't be, Emily says. She points at Alibi with the gun. You helped.
Careful with that thing, Alibi says. I'm telling you, I am Alibi.
Tell me about our wedding day, she says from behind the gun.
I don't remember.
I can't, Alibi admits. Emily, honey, my memories aren't...
Shut up, she says, cutting him off.
You don't even sound like yourself.
Emily turns to Dr. Shinose.
Can you do anything?
Shinose walks over to the machine's controls and turns them back on. The humming begins again as it warms up.
Maybe we can force it out of him,
Shinose says to Emily.
Really?
Emily asks, hopeful. The downcast look on Shinose's face quickly dashes Emily's hopes.
It might send it on, Shinose says. But we cannot be sure your alibi will still be there after it is gone.
Emily steadies her aim and glares at Alibi.
Where will it go?
She asks Shinose.
Into the near future, somewhere,
the doctor says, uncharacteristically imprecise.
I will send it out to deep space. Perhaps it will dissipate.
Do it, Emily says. Dr. Shinose turns up the power to the time machine's capsule. The crackling blue energy once again surrounds Alibi. He starts to feel himself detaching from his body, floating. And then he's not there. He's in a gray place, with no definition. He's young again. But he can see his old self, his 91-year-old self, standing in front of him, a reflection in fate's mirror.
Hello, the old man says.
The reflection speaks.
Hello? Alibi replies. We don't have much time, the old man says. Right now, neither of us is anchored in our body. That's both good and bad. At least it lets us talk.
Are you me? Alibi asks the old man.
Yes and no, old Alibi says. You came in and kind of forced me out. You've been in control and taken over since last night, so I've had time to think about what's happened. I've been along as a passenger in my own mind, thinking what you think. I think the leaders have used the ancient enemy's tech to send you ahead in time.
That sort of makes sense. Why, I can't remember. I haven't lived it,
Alibi says.
And you never would have, the old man says.
What?
This isn't your future, Alibi. You don't belong here. This is not your time, the old man tells him. The things you remember about fighting back against them? That didn't happen here.
It didn't?
It didn't. They captured me. I was their prisoner for many years, the old man says, his voice heavy with sorrow. They were waiting for something, some time threshold to be passed, and once it did, they let me go. But you are older than I was when they captured me, and you are free and fighting back. The gray begins to fade to black and stars. The old man disappears for a moment. Then both the gray and the old man return. We are almost out of time, the old alibi tells the younger. The enemy has not only used the ancient enemy's tech to send your bioelectrical matrix ahead in time, they have also used their own tech to send you into a different timeline entirely. Can I get back? I don't know. I think so, with the machine at a lower power, but we need to stop the machine for now. Tell that old stubborn head Emily we got married at her parents' place in Vermont. Go on, try to wake up and talk. Alibi feels himself snap back into his 91-year-old body in the capsule. He opens his eyes and clears his throat. Vermont! Alibi tries to yell over the hum of the time machine. What did he say? Emily shouts over to Dr. Shinose. Vermont! Alibi says again. Old stubbornhead! I think he said Vermont, Shinose answers. Stubbornhead? It's him! Oh God, power it down! Emily tells her. That's where we got married! He's remembering! Oh God! Shinose powers down the machine. When she opens the capsule, Alibi smiles at her. Applesauce, he says. Shinose is startled a moment as she remembers. With Dr. Krish! Yes, she says. She looks back at Emily. It seems it is him, but that doesn't explain the Tachyons. There are two alibis in here, inside of me. Alibi tells the two women. I'm a younger version that has been sent ahead and across through time by the leaders. The old me is still in here. Told me about Vermont. Stubborn head, he says to Emily. But only one of us can be in control in here at a time. But my alibi is still in there somewhere? Emily asks. Yep. She glares at Alibi. I want him back. Turn the machine back on, Alibi says. Only not so much power. Old me was about to tell me what to do. The old and young Alibi face each other again in the gray space. And that's going to work? Young Alibi asks. You're the one who said you'd done it before, and then I could see you travel as you thought about it, the old alibi says. That was using an alien artifact. Don't know if I can do it alone. You're not alone. There are two of us, the old man says. Let's do this. Aided by the field of the time machine, and boosted by the duplicate mind power of his older self, Alibi travels by thought. He sees himself, his true body, also strapped in place, restrained for a reason obscured. He cannot make out details. He sees as if through a veil of white noise, a curtain of static. Then he is on the other side of the curtain, through the veil, and he feels his older self rip away. Left behind. Alibi returns, back in his body, his younger body. He is restrained, strapped into some sort of device by those holding him captive. Alibi opens his eyes. Across the room he spies a fully armored and armed alien, one of the DeVriesium.
What?
The Devrisium notes Alibi's sudden awareness and approaches.
You should not be able to return! Not without some sort of previous time-traveling experience! How did you—
Well, actually, Alibi starts to interrupt an answer, but both of them are drowned out by the boom of an explosion. That sounded like one of our booms, Alibi says. The Devrisium ignores him. It returns across the room to concentrate on controls of some kind.
Probably his defenses.
Another boom rings out, and a third
boom!
Those are our booms. The sounds of blaster strikes from safe cruisers.
As Alibi watches, the Devrisium removes the energy sword from the sheath on its back and plunges it into the controls in front of it. Dark energy plays around the console before it goes black. The Devrisium draws the sword back out. It crosses the room to stand before Alibi. After staring at him a moment, or presumably staring at him, hard to tell in that suit, the Devrisium plunges the sword into the controls of the device Alibi is strapped into, shorting them out.
They say you cannot be killed,
the Devrisium says. Others like you, your kind, have tried, Alibi says. I've been lucky so far. It's your kind that say such things, not me.
Let us see, then,
the Devrisium says. The alien backs up and draws the sword back over its shoulder, preparing to strike. It coils and then begins to launch itself at Alibi, bringing the sword over and down.
Boom!
The room shakes. The Devrisium stumbles, and its sword slices the air next to Alibi. The sword embeds itself deep in the rock floor in front of him.
What?
The Devrisium tries to pull its sword from out of the floor, but it's not budging. Lucky, see? Alibi says.
Not after I free my sword,
the Devrisium says, as it continues to tug and pull on the alien halberd. Alibi stifles a laugh. The attempt puts the alien in an awkward position as two safe troopers finally arrive in the room.
There he is! Alibi Jones, Cruiser One, we found him,
the first trooper says.
We finally found Alibi! Let command know immediately.
Look out! There's one of them! The second trooper in says, spotting the Devrisium. Giving up on the sword, the Devrisium straightens up and turns to face the troopers. The first trooper fires at the Devrisium.
A field nullifier.
Krish's invention is their most effective weapon against the Devrisium. It strips their suit's containment fields and renders their armor inert, usually causing the Devrisium to implode into a sort of temporal black hole as their many years of traveling through time catch up with them all at once.
Or something like that.
This representative of the race doesn't implode, but instead glistens as a golden energy plays over the surface of its exosuit. Apparently, the Devrisium have developed a means of dissipating the effects of the nullifier. The second trooper fires. Again, golden energy glistens across the exosuit's surface.
Enough!
The Devrisium cries. It tries once more to free its sword from the floor. Unsuccessful, it then straightens up, touches something on its arm, and disappears.
We need to get out of here! That sword isn't stable away from the Devrisium!
Alibi calls over to the two troopers.
It's about to do that whole implosion thing they do. Could one of you get me off this thing?
The second trooper comes over to Alibi. She takes off her helmet, an attractive woman underneath, a couple of years younger than Alibi. Their eyes meet for a brief minute. Hers are hazel. She smiles a quick smile at him, and then gets down to business,
freeing Alibi from the restraints of the Devrisium device.
She looks familiar.
Do I know you, Trooper? Alibi asks his rescuer. I don't think so, sir, she replies. This way, please. She leads Alibi out of the Devrisium base and onto a waiting safe cruiser. What's your name, Trooper? He asks her as they wait for the airlock. She gives him a curious look. Hazel eyes narrow a bit as she sizes him up.
I know those eyes.
She extends her hand. I'm Emily.
That was Alibi Jones, Memory Yet Green, on Glow in the Dark Radio.
I do like that story. Kind of proud of it. That's one of the really good Alibi Jones short stories, I think. The title was taken from Isaac Asimov's autobiography, in case you were curious, but I added a comma because of the context. Isaac's volume is called In Memory Yet Green, and this is Memory, comma, Yet Green, because of the circumstances. I hope you enjoyed that, and we are almost through the Time War. Our next stop, our next story, is The Last Battle. I've also called it The Last Time Battle, but I think I'm going to stick with The Last Battle from now on. And yeah, Alibi may have just met his future wife. At least she was his wife in that past timeline that they put him into. Boy, time wars can get confusing, can't they? I will say, though, that is not the last we'll see of Emily. She's coming back. Maybe not in the next story, but she'll be back eventually. She's a part of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest, the next novel. But up next we have Alibi Jones and the Time War of the Devrisium, The Last Battle. The final of the four connected, interconnected short stories that make up Alibi Jones and the Time War of the Devrisium. A reminder to check out my music extra, the episode that came down on Friday. Spending an hour with Matt Hutton and Sean Tuohy of Spray 9, Envy, and The Red Telephone talking about their 25-year music career as they did a reunion show in Burlington last night at Radio Bean playing songs from all their bands. It was quite a show. It was a lot of fun. I'm glad to have been a part of it by doing this interview and putting that out there. Also in my news, The Adventures of Alibi Jones. Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her, the new audiobook, is out. Came out this week, so you can get that at Audible, or Amazon, or iTunes. That's the book in pure audiobook form, so no introductions and things like this, no commentary. Straight-ahead stuff. Just the story, just the books, just the facts, ma'am. And once again, that's available everywhere. And this book that you're listening to, The Time War of the Devrisium, should be there in the next week or so. Soon to follow. That is all for this time. Our theme music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. And I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.